Welcome to the Creative Hustler Show, the podcast where we interview the best artists in the animation and illustration community, creative professionals, animators, illustrators, directors, and more. This is the show aimed at giving you, the creative professionals, the knowledge to become better at being an artist and a pro. Now, here's your host, Rodrigo Flamenco.
Hi, this is Rodrigo from Frame Freak Studio, and this is the Creative Hustler Show. Today's guest is Henry Thurlow. Now, this is, I think I'm really excited for this interview because he's an animator from New York City who has actually traveled to Japan to work as an animator there. And so far, we have been wanting to interview somebody from the industry of animation in Japan, but since most of them are Japanese and do not speak English, we have not been able to do so. So I'm really happy to have Henry here because he has a lot of experience into it. I know a lot of people who are very interested to go to Japan and live there and work as an artist. And I think it will be a great insight for those who want to do that because I think there are many things that we have to consider before doing that kind of a jump. So hopefully this interview will be enlightening to us. So without any further ado, welcome Henry.
Hi, I'm Henry Thurlow. That was a good introduction and glad to be here.
So just to get us started out, how was your history? Because I know that in the United States, like there is enough job for animation and you chose to actually travel to the other side of the world and kind of start all over again in a new industry with a new culture, new rules. So how was the history of what made you take this decision and move there?
I knew I always wanted to be an animator or an artist, and then pretty early in life I realized I wanted to become an animator. The switch that made me realize I really want to focus on animation to bring the story back as far as I can was probably like sixth grade or so in elementary school. I saw the HBO Spawn TV series, which was probably way too adult for what I should have been watching, but it was so cool to me, and I was like, "Oh man, this is the greatest thing in the world." I want to watch more of this. This is what I want to make, because I had always owned a sketchbook even through elementary school, but I was like, "No, this is what I want to make now." Spawn, oh my god, it's awesome. But then when I went to look for more stuff like Spawn, I realized, you know, America doesn't really produce stuff like Spawn. That was really an outlier. So I couldn't find much more of it. But what I could find was Japanese anime. So the local video store had, you know, an anime section. It was really small at the time, of course. It was just maybe 15 videos, something like that. And all like old obscure OVAs that you know, most people probably don't even know now, but not all of them were obscure. There was also like Vampire Hunter D there, but MD Geist and Genocide, a new one. Just different crazy stuff like that. The original Guyver OVA series, Doomed Megalopolis, like some of the names are starting to come back to me. But so I would rent those, and I fell in love with that stuff. Oh, Yoma was always my favorite. Curse of the Undead Yoma was what it was called in the VHS days. And so that got me into anime. And then later on, I got into, you know, the popular stuff, Dragon Ball Z and Rurouni Kenshin. But I at that time, I never thought, so I knew that I wanted to be an animator, and I was inspired by those kind of, you know, super ultra violent, cool, you know, sexy anime from Japan. But I never thought I was going to move to Japan. I had no interest, to be honest, in moving to Japan. I decided I wanted to be an animator, so I'll study animation in the States. I'm from New York, so when I graduated high school, I went down to the Delaware College of Art and Design, DCAD, for 2 years, and then back up to New York for Pratt Institute for another couple of years. So I got an associate's degree and a bachelor's degree in, I guess, I forget exactly what was written on it, but traditional animation, I think. And at that time, I was taking all the advice from the teachers and just, you know, looking around for what we were producing in the States, because my assumption was I'm going to graduate college and then work right here, right, in New York or somewhere in America. And, you know, anime was gradually becoming more and more popular. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, we're going to start producing our own stuff like this soon, right? Like America is going to at some point announce that there's some studio making their own Ghost in the Shell for all intents and purposes, or they're making something really cool and serious. They are now in Castlevania, cut to, you know, 2020, many years later. And, you know, like Castlevania is kind of the thing that I thought would be popping up all over the place, right? And then I'll get involved in one of those and I'll be happy and that'll be my life. I'll be making cool adult animation right here in New York, and we're good to go. But when I graduated, I realized that wasn't the reality. And even now in 2020, there's Castlevania, but that's an outlier. And for the vast majority of animators, you know, making something like that professionally really isn't an option. There's just very few productions like that. So I did get involved with some cool stuff. I was really proud of my resume when I first graduated. Well, when I first graduated, I had a lot of problems, right? Finding my first freelance job, the same problems that all animators have. You know, no one would take me seriously as like a recent college graduate. It took me months to get my first freelance job, which was some silly little nothing for a website. But because I got that first little job, that upped my resume a little bit, got me a slightly better but also silly job. And then just keep repeating that until your resume is long enough to finally get you, you know, something decent. So I worked on like season one of Super Jail at Augenblick Studios. That was awesome. I loved that experience. I worked on a few music videos, the MGMT Kids music video, Kesha, Your Love Is My Drug music video. And then some Dora the Explorer and Go Diego Go, like games for PC. So I enjoyed working on all of those. And I was really happy that I, in just a few years, had actually entered the industry and was working on legitimately professional stuff. And Super Jail, for the record, I also just think is awesome. So, like, I was actually involved in something that I was enjoying. But in the back of my head, I knew that this isn't really what I wanted to make. What I really wanted to make was that, you know, Ghost in the Shell or Rurouni Kenshin or something, like, you know, these guys are, you know, holding samurai swords and chopping each other up or whatever, right? Like, so something that isn't the thing that I was making, right? And as I looked around the industry, I realized there no one is making this here anywhere. It doesn't exist. I can make my own short films if I want, but professionally, like, there's nothing to even look for work-wise, right? And I was kind of just settled in, I guess I'll just have to deal with this reality for a while. But I met Kevin Leahy, who is Hideyuki Kikuchi's like translator. Hideyuki Kikuchi is the creator of Vampire Hunter D. He was here, I'm in Japan right now, I keep saying here. He was in New York for like a birthday event. It was just like a fan thing, like Vampire Hunter D fans showed up to it, right? But I showed up to it also. And so I didn't speak Japanese at the time. So I was talking to Kevin, his translator, and I was like, how did you get involved in this franchise, right? It's not really anime. Hideyuki writes the novels, but I was like, still, for all intents and purposes, you, Kevin, are involved in the Vampire Hunter D franchise, but you're an American. Like, how did that happen? How did you start in America, but now you're like a big member of the Vampire Hunter D franchise? And I listened to advice he gave me then, which was just like, well, if you want to work on, you know, something Japan is producing, first you have to be in Japan. If you're not in Japan, you can't get the Japanese job. Now in 2020, that might be a little different, right, with the internet. But up until just a few years ago, that wasn't the case, right? Up until just a really like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, if you're not in Japan, then you're not going to get a Japanese job. And that applies to any country, obviously, right? But then I was like, yeah, but how would I go to Japan? Like, I had never even been out of the country, with the exception of, like, I went to the animation festival in Ottawa, Canada, but it's like I went over the Canadian border 30 minutes. Like, that was like the extent of me traveling out of the country. But so I talked to him for a while, and he was giving me different suggestions about how you could get to Japan hypothetically. And I applied for some of that stuff. The JET program is how I eventually did end up getting out there. And that's how Kevin, many, many years earlier, went out to Japan also. But I was applying for the JET program, which is like an English teaching kind of thing. They'll send you out there to work. But I never expected to get it. I'm like, all right, well, I heard some interesting advice about maybe a suggestion of how to eventually be working in Japan. But I don't know realistically if, this is going to happen. And then I just kept working in New York, but I kept getting email after email over the course of the next year or so, like, oh, you've been moved up to phase two. Oh, you've been accepted to phase three. You're in the final rounds. You might really get it. And then one day I got the email, like, and apparently I wasn't a first choice for the JET program. A couple people had to drop out, and then they were like, oh, you were on the third ring or whatever, but a couple people dropped out. So the good news is we can send you out to Japan. You got the job. But the bad news is, because it took so long to get back to you, you have to make a decision right now and leave next month. And I was like, but it's funny, because the way I always tell the story is, like, for me, following my passion in animation is always the easiest thing in the world. The answer is always yes if it means advancing my animation career. There's nothing else. There's, like, nothing even second most important for me. And so I was immediately on the phone. They were like, I know you need some time to think about it. And I was just like, yeah, I accept. And they're like, you'll just move to Japan next month. And I'm like, yes. And they're like, okay. And then I got on the phone with everyone I know, like my parents. And I'm like, hey, got some news. I'm going to be moving out to Japan next month. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah, I'm moving to Japan next month. And they were like, how long? And I'm like, honestly, probably forever. And they were like, okay, whatever. they already knew that was kind of my attitude of, like, move around if I need to for the job. But that's how it went down. And then I got ready to move. I moved out to Japan for the first couple years in Japan, first two or three years in Japan. I didn't know the language very well. I had started studying a little bit at the Japan Society in New York, but just a little bit. When I came to Japan, I didn't speak Japanese for all intents and purposes. And I also did have this English job in the countryside. It wasn't even in Tokyo. It was in Wakayama, Japan, which is total countryside of Japan. And so for the first few years, I just studied the language, studied the culture, got myself ready to be able to interview in Japanese, because I assumed, and I was right to assume at least at that time, the only way you'd ever get a job in anime is you approach the anime studios and speak their native language and make your case in Japanese to them, right? Hey, hire me. And so when I was eventually good enough, I moved to Tokyo. I applied to a whole bunch of studios, and some interviews went better than others. Some went really not well, and my Japanese wasn't coming out correctly, and it was really bad and embarrassing. And then others, like, the Japanese wasn't PSU, but they didn't like my portfolio. They were like, what is all this stuff? And I'm like, oh, it's American Cartoon Network stuff. What do you think? We don't make that here in Japan. What the heck is this? And I'm like, yeah, but, like, wouldn't you like someone who knows a different style too? And they're like, no, we don't want a person that knows different style, which is funny because, you know, that you, I feel like a lot of the advice I got in the West was always wrong, to be honest, looking back in hindsight. Like, the teachers in college would always be like, don't draw anime. And, like, obviously they didn't assume that I was going to be moving out to Japan and applying to actual anime studios. But nevertheless, like, you'd think, I don't know. I guess I was of the mindset that you know, because in the West, when you're applying, it's not a bad thing to have a lot of different styles in your portfolio. It's like, oh, look, whatever kind of freelance job we are comes in our little studio, this person will probably be able to do. They're not just dead set on their own one thing, right? But here in Japan, it's like, no, you have to have a portfolio exactly showing that you can do the specific thing that they make here, nonstop, which is obvious in hindsight. But, you know, I didn't have the right portfolio when I went in there. So I had to rework my whole portfolio from zero, like again and again and again, and I kept applying. So it took a few years after coming to Japan to finally, eventually, one little in-between studio said, okay, if you are aware of the heinous like work hours and pay and you're not going to ask us for additional visa support once your like correct visa right now runs out, you know, like it was all these conditions that were all terrible. But I was like, no, like if this is my moment that I can crack into this industry that almost no foreigner can crack into, then I'm going to take it. And so I did. I cracked into a studio called Nakamura Pro, which is like an in-between studio. They just do in-between animation. But immediately I got to start in-betweening for Gundam and Pokemon and a bunch of other series that were just being produced at the time. So as hard as it was to get in, and then the whole, I don't know if you'll ask more questions about this, but like the pay and work hours are really, really harsh here. But as hard as all that was, you know, I was sitting there actually, you know, in-betweening Pikachu and then, you know, doing cleanup on a Gundam, right? That was legit, actual, going to be in the Gundam series, right? And so, yeah, that's how I got into the anime industry. And then since then, just to catch up to where I am now and what I'm doing now, just real quick, but I'll give you the quick version of it for now. So I did in-between animation at that studio. Then I moved to Studio Piero, which is the production studio behind Naruto and Tokyo Ghoul, and in the past, like Yu Yu Hakusho and like just a whole ton of shows, Bleach. And I worked there for over a year. I worked on all the Tokyo Ghoul series and OVAs and Akatsuki no Yona, Naruto, the last movie. And I was still doing in-between animation with them, but then I started doing secondary key animation with them too. The divide of what the job titles are in Japan and in the West is kind of different. The jobs aren't really the same thing. What is secondary key animation? It's cleanup of someone else's layout while also potentially having to draw new keys if the animation director indicates that you do in their check of it. Leaving Piero was hard because I really liked working for Piero, but it became, for all intents and purposes, like the easy explanation of why I left there was like it became very evident like I wouldn't be able to move up to the next step for a long, long time. If I had stayed there, their process for moving people up to layouts was, it seemed like many years, and I wanted to give it a shot, and some other places would give me that shot. So I want to keep moving and pushing myself, right, and trying new jobs. And at the end of the day, I feel my strongest point is motion and, like, making characters move, not just nice illustrations, right? So I needed to become that Gengamon, which is what they call the layout artists. I needed to become that to have any control over motion. So I left Piero. I worked freelance and for a small studio called Bang Bang Animation for a while. And I did key animation for a bunch of stuff. And then I have a friend who's a background artist and art director, Arthel Isom, and he's been a friend out here in Japan for many, many years now. And he's a background artist. He's worked in the anime industry longer than I have. He's also an American like I am. I always knew that he wanted to create his own studio. That was just like a dream that he always had mentioned. I won't go into all the details, but like I had a project that needed producing. He wasn't working on anything at the time and was looking for like his next big thing to do. we had a conversation. We decided, what if now is the time to like open this studio and I would get involved from the ground floor also. And so that's what I and he have been doing for the last handful of years now, 4 years, something like that. So the studio De Art Stagio. The word stagio is like a mix of the way you say the Japanese word stagio and a Japanese word that Arthel knows, shitaji, which is like the underpainting or the foundation of a background drawing. So that word means something. Like the foundation is important, the foundation of a drawing, the foundation of, you know, making sure your fundamentals are ready to go before you move forward. So we opened the studio in Tokyo and we continue to help out on all the productions from all the studios we've worked with over the years. So Day Art has been credited on, we've worked on key animation and, you know, different aspects of the production, helping the bigger studios on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, One Piece, Seven Deadly Sins, Overlord, Tokyo Ghoul, Attack on Titan, like lots of stuff. And we also make in-house productions, right? So we're a production studio, not just a helper studio. Ideally, that's what we want to be doing completely main, full-time, right? Like, you know, like a Pixar, essentially. Like, you know, we're making full movies. But right now, you know, we're still new, so the projects are much smaller. So we're still helping out on other productions while we produce smaller stuff like commercials. We've made commercials for Adidas and the clothing company Snipes, and music videos, pilot films. We did pilot films for indie comics from the West, Indigo Ignited, Teflon Funk, Exogenesis. And as far as music videos, Thinkin' was one that we did. And then the biggest one, the biggest thing we've worked on is Netflix's Sound and Fury, Sturge Hill Simpson, Sound and Fury. Sturge Hill Simpson recently released like a new album and with it like an anime anthology. And, you know, there was some really big names attached to the project, like Koji Morimoto and Michael Arias, like pretty famous anime directors. But Arthel and I were lucky enough, and De Art Stagio was lucky enough that we also got involved, and Arthel directed one of the segments, and I directed one of the segments, wrote and directed, actually. It was like crazy amounts of freedom. It's the coolest project I've worked on so far, to actually have freedom to make something from zero to final. If you guys out there watching could check out Sturge Hill Simpson, Sound and Fury, the two 100% 2D segments, because we're a 2D studio, not 3D studio. The two fully 2D segments in that were completely produced by De Art Stagio. Yeah, and I directed and made one of them.
That's an awesome story.
Yeah, and that's where I am today. That's where I am today. Still working for that. We're currently working on another music video, which I can't talk about. That's the kind of work we're doing right now.
That's awesome. And you mentioned for a moment there, and well, the reason why I was able to find you was because of an old article in Kotaku where you went into detail about the harsh situation for starting animators in Japan, or animation in general. And did you know that in advance when you wanted, before you went to Japan, or was it like a surprise when you found out about it?
No, I knew beforehand, and that is super important. I think if people ask me suggestion, what would you suggest? How would you go about getting into the anime industry or whatever? Which might be another question you have at some point. But one of the things I mentioned is like you have to know exactly what you're getting into. So I did. I looked up, like, you know, you're only paid a few dollars per drawing as an in-between animator, and then the studio I ended up getting in was the harshest among the harsh, which was like one drawing, $1 for essentially. And, but anime drawings are like super, super detailed. So in the West, I might be able to do a whole bunch of drawings in 1 hour. It would still be like, what, 10 drawings an hour? So you'd earn $10 an hour. But in here, like, it's almost an hour per drawing. So you're earning like $1 an hour, kind of, as an in-between animator at the beginning. I mean, I guess that depends if you're doing Anpanman, like a simple character that they have out here. Maybe you can do more, a lot more. But so I knew I was getting into that situation. And so I, like, before... Once I confirmed that I got into the anime industry, I immediately, before starting a month later, I moved, and I moved to like when I went to the moving agency, I was like, where's the cheapest place you could find? And then they showed me some stuff and I'm like, no, you don't understand. Cheap, like nothing, like practically free. And they're like, I don't know, like a share house with 9 people or something. And I'm like, that's what I'm looking for. And so that's what I lived in for the first few years as an in-between animator. Dirt cheap, like almost not free, but like really, really cheap, right? So I knew what I was getting into, and I knew the work hours were harsh and all of that stuff. What I didn't understand was how hard it is to get credited as an in-between animator in particular. Japan is really good about crediting people when they're key animators. I mean, I've even had a couple instances where I wasn't credited on that, and that's frustrating, but that's not normal. Like, that's like maybe a studio messed up or something, because usually they're pretty good about crediting key animators, better than the West even. Like, I see, you know, Rick and Morty artists on Twitter sometimes posting, like, you know, the Canadian studio that worked on this wasn't credited, and I call out that, you know, title, but I think it happens a lot in the West, right? But that's, and I really hate that. Like, I think all the artists should always get credited. So here, key animators are generally credited. But, you know, if I'm working for, you know, if I worked a 12-hour day for $12 that day, right? Like, I didn't even re-earn as much as I, you know, ate, like, my lunch and dinner that day accumulated to $14, and I earned $12, right? So if I'm doing that much work for that little, the very least I wanted was, like, at least I'm credited in all this stuff. At least I see my name in the credits of Gundam and Pokemon and et cetera, et cetera. I got credited in a few things. I did get credited in the one Pokemon TV special that I worked on, The Origin. But then I worked on, like, probably a dozen or two television episodes also, but I never got credited in any of those, right? Just the studios named it. So that was frustrating. So there was even frustrations on top of all the hard stuff that I was expecting. The reason I originally did an interview for BuzzFeed, and then that's what Kotaku and a bunch of places picked up on and then wrote their own kind of article on it. I don't know if it came across as complaining. I just wanted to kind of tell it like it was. I chose to get into this industry. I don't regret getting into this industry, even when it was at the hardest of the hard points for me. I'm glad I took the exact path I took, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But at the same time, if you're paying artists that little for that much work, I'm not going to also hide that fact from the world, right? If people ask me, I'll tell them, and, you know, that's too bad for you if then, you know, there's some backlash and that, you know, you were doing something bad. So, you know, that's how that kind of played out, I feel. I don't mind talking about it at all, obviously. I don't want to be known as the guy that just complains and whines about my own industry, you know, all the time. So that's why, since that article, I try to stay away from specifically being like, oh, they're bad and all that stuff. I think the mindset, I think the mindset has just been drilled in here. Animators are a group of people that are paid really low, and that's just the reality. Like, it's almost just like culturally that has seeped into everyone's mind. And so then everyone just shrugs their shoulders and kind of laughs it off, as opposed to, you know, thinking about how to make actual change to that. So it's frustrating. At our own studio now at Day Art, you know, we take in a lot of Western clients. You know, all the music videos and stuff I mentioned were Western clients as opposed to Japanese clients. When we work in the anime industry, we're, you know, the Japanese productions, we're kind of forced even to this day to deal with Japanese standard prices. But, you know, we can negotiate slightly better, you know, when we're working with Western clients. So now that we're working at Day Art, our pay is slightly different. It's still not Western money at all, not even close. But, you know, it's a bit more reasonable, you know, now. But we had to do that ourselves, like, because sitting around and waiting for the Japanese anime industry to change, I mean, you'll just be holding your breath until you're dead.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, just to make a note, I at least I don't think you came out from my perspective as complaining in the article, but there is as well, as you may imagine, there is a lot of people that maybe romanticize the job that they think that it's going to be like all flowers and sunshines and rainbows. And
not at all.
Yeah, animation in general, like, it doesn't matter where you live in, it's a hard work, and it's very complex because it's not like a job that can be done by just one person, but you actually have to integrate with a team, and yeah, there is a lot to it, and I think it is important to let people know, like, okay, this is the reality. Like, it's not about being pessimistic, it's not about complain or anything like that, but this is a reality, and yeah, if you want to do this, like, you are going to have to prove it. If you say that you want to do this, it's not about you feeling like you want to do this. It's not about you just saying, but you will actually have to prove with your actions and your results of taking this kind of troubles that you actually want to do it like you did. So I think that's important as well. And something that I wanted to ask you about was like the cultural differences. So far I have seen, I have not been in Japan, although I do want to travel there once this whole mess of lockdowns ends. But I obviously I have seen a lot of documentaries in Japan, and I have some friends living there, and one thing that comes up about well, there is a lot of cultural differences between this side of the world and that side of the world. And for example, so I wanted to ask you, like, did you have any problem, like, integrating with the people? Like, for example, one tiny specific example that I know that I have seen come up a lot in documentaries is that Japanese people usually don't like tattooed people. And on this side of the world, we don't have any problem. And I see that you have, like, a huge tattoo in your arm. So, things like that. Did you have any issues trying to integrate to a society, or?
I guess, I mean the super easy answer and the obvious answer is yes, to a certain degree, right? It's a totally different culture. It's a totally different language. There's totally different social cues for different things. When it comes to the tattoo, I actually didn't get the tattoo until I was out here in Japan. I got it in Osaka. When I first came to Japan, I didn't have any tattoos, but then I sold it. I got one. A reaction to a tattoo or a reaction to just the fact that you're a foreigner is way different than, you know, things you experience in your home country. I guess it depends on the person, though. Like, if you want to work in if it is important for you to work and live in a like a environment that your own social cues and your own culture's humor and you know, knowledge of your own pop culture and stuff is important, you know, like, you go into work, you just use your own language, and then everyone knows the news and stuff you're talking about, and you can make friends super easily and under your own culture's conditions, you know, like, if that's just what you want to experience, then you probably shouldn't enter small studios in completely random different countries in different languages, right? Because obviously, yeah, like, you know, everything's different from the way it is in America. But I like that personally. Like, I don't, while I acknowledge, like, differences exist, obviously, I never viewed it as like a hard thing. When you just worded that question, and when everyone words that question, they word it like, so was it tough, you know, working in a different culture? You know, what was there cultural things that made things hard? I don't think it made anything hard. I found it like fascinating and fun and enjoyed it, right? Like, I was super quick to say yes to the job when I could move out to Japan. And that's because I know, I guess maybe partially I have the attitude that I find that exciting. I find that enjoyable. I find learning the new language among new people and a new culture really cool and fun. And, you know, like put the challenge on me, right? Everyone else is going about their day normal. Like, I'm the one that's challenged. Like, how am I going to fit in and learn a different type of humor and how to navigate in a completely different environment than I'm used to? But I don't find that frustrating. I find that you know, neat and a good challenge. So that was never really hard for me. When I got into the anime industry, specifically, not just working as like a teacher in Japan, which is what I did the first few years. Then there was like another set of kind of culture shocks, to be honest, but that was more like Japanese anime industry specific, right? So the stuff like people give a sideways eye to a tattoo, that all disappeared, because now I'm entering an art industry, and artists are kind of similar everywhere, as they don't really care about stuff like that, right? While I was a teacher, I had to cover this up, and then if teachers found out after work that I have it, they'd be like, ooh, a tattoo in Japan, you know, that's this or that. But now, when I worked in the anime industry, I could just come in a t-shirt, and everyone's like, whatever, Henry has tattoos, who cares, right? So some things became a lot easier because I'm surrounded by artists again, right? But then other things became harder because they work really, let's say, hard. I would say to the point madness, especially in the in-between studios, which is like they all have their headphones popped in morning until night, no discussion. It's just silence throughout the entire room, right? That's not how it is now at Day Art, because, you know, Arthel and I kind of control the culture of the room a little bit. But so now I'm kind of, I really enjoy where I work now, obviously. But when I was in just the room with all the Japanese animators, I didn't hate it, but that was another level of culture shock, in that, like, Japanese animators in specific, they just pop their headphones in and it's quiet from morning until night. Like, no one talks to anyone, and it's just, you just hear the sound of pencils like scratching across paper or clicking if people are doing stuff digitally. And that was a little hard. That was a little hard because I was like, man, I kind of want someone to talk to. Like, I'm working all the 10-hour, 12-hour plus days and actually doing zero conversating, right? Like, I'm literally just working that entire time. That was probably less Japanese culture, though, and more like this industry specific. Like, but again, like, if you're confronted with a different culture or a different set of circumstances than you're used to, you can either decide you don't want to be there and leave, or you can figure out how to make it work. So I'm of the attitude of, you know, figure out how to make it work. So.
Yeah, it's because I did have a maybe different but similar experience. I want to live to Bulgaria for a while, and they have like the Cyrillic alphabet and whole different language. So the things that I found hard were the simplest things, like, because I wasn't able to read anything. So I think we take for granted the tiny things of, for example, getting out and knowing what bus to take and where to go, that. And when you have to actively think of all the steps that you have to take, and now we have like things like Google Maps and smartphones to help us, but yeah, like, just even to stop, try to think of the everything that I needed to do in the day, plan it very carefully, because if not, I could get lost in the city. That was like a mentally exhausting in the beginning for the first 3 months or so. But again, as you say, like, it's a challenge, and once you learn it, like, things go back to normal. And on the topic of the working hours, this is something that I have the curiosity. It is something that's happening inside the industry, or is it imposed by the companies, or do the animators kind of impose that on themselves? Because I do know that Japanese people are like very dedicated to their work. They usually in any industry have the tendency to work extra hours, so like to not leave the place until they see the boss leaving, things like that. And in some cases, I think they even have a word for working to death, right? So I think it was chorus or something like that.
You mean just like all of the conditions, like the working really long, and like do people impose it on themselves, or are they told? It's funny. They're not told. Arthel and I, I'll mention this at the end if there's like stuff to pitch, but Arthel and I do a vlog series like every week. We've been doing that all year, where we just talk about animation industry related stuff. And one of the topics we talked about that, like, is the work ethic anywhere, but specifically in Japan, is it imposed, or do the artists actually want it kind of that way? And it is, it to be honest, the artists just do it that way often. Like there was a few times where I really had to go, right? Like I really had to just work the 8-hour day, and then I had to go, right? Like there was something in the evening that a doctor's appointment or something, I have to go, right? And so I just left, right? Like, so it's imposed. It's not like there's a guard or like the boss standing at the door, and if you leave now, you're fired. This is in your contract or whatever, right? It's just like social norms, right? To just keep to essentially work until your work is done. There are very harsh deadlines. So, well, I'll get into that in a second. But like the reason I think most people stay, maybe it is cultural. Yeah, because even when I was a teacher, like the teachers might be done with their work, right? And it's time to go. But if no one else is going, you don't want to be the first one out the door, right? And maybe that's not the case in America. Maybe America's like, ooh, I worked for the least amount of hours but still got paid the most. Ha ha, I'm awesome. I left 10 minutes early, right? I'm badass. But here, for sure, that doesn't exist, that's American culture, right? I only recognize that's American culture like when I come to Japan, right? Like in hindsight, oh wow, that's what my culture is. Because here, like you don't want to be the first one out the door. Like that's dishonorable. That's not cool. You know what's cool? Like I got so much work that I'm working hard on and doing so well that like I didn't even notice it was time to leave, and I'm still here 2 hours later. So like if everyone else is just still, so there would be English teachers that like I know for a fact are done with their stuff. They can just leave, but they would then like take out their assignments and like, you know, that they're giving the kids tomorrow, and then just start reworking them. It's like, how could I make these questions better and more efficient? How could I relay out the page so that it works a little bit better? And it's like, why are you doing this? You can just go, like you're done. No, I got to make this better. But it's really because you don't want to leave first, right? Like you want to be the person who's working the hardest in the room or have that appearance. So in the anime industry, I think it's the same to an extent. Like, no one wants to be that, like those days that I left after the 8-hour day, I guarantee that, I mean, not that I care, right? I'm not saying like I really care about this and that I'm affected by the same social cues, but like I guarantee there were some people like that went, you know, like gave like a weird look like Henry only after 8 hours. Wow. okay, whatever. Like, again, I don't care personally, but I'm sure that there were some people thinking that. Whereas on the one day that, like, or not the one day, like the handful of days that, like, I was still working there the latest, like 16, 17 hour workday, and then people are leaving, but I'm still there for a couple hours. You know, on those days, they're like, oh, okay, Henry, I'll see you tomorrow. Wow, hard worker, huh? And I'm like, oh, not done with the sequence yet. All right, Henry, cool. On that day, the exact opposite, right? People are thinking like, oh, this guy's a hard worker. You know, Henry, American nonetheless, but working that hard? Wow, look at him, right? So people want that feeling, right, of like, I'm the hardest one in worker in the room, or, you know, at very least I'm part of the
badass.
yeah exactly. Or at very least if it's not individualistic, it's like I'm putting in my weight fully as a fully functioning, fully hardworking member of this team, so I can be respected as like I belong here, really, right? Like I'm a part, yeah, of this through and through. Oh, the other thing I was going to mention, though, is, you know, part of it can't be helped, though. I don't want people to watch the video and be like, oh, Japanese animators don't have to work so hard. They just choose to. The reality is the deadlines out here are ridiculous. I mean, yes, there are ridiculous deadlines for freelance jobs in the West, too. Some of the music videos I worked on was like, we have to be done by Monday, and it's Thursday. And I'm like, how are we going to make a two-minute video? In those, like, that's crazy, right? But there, like in the West, I feel, or in America, New York freelance industry, you know, what I've worked in to the extent that I can comment on it, you know, it might be crazy for a week or two, like crazy nuts. How are we going to get this done? Nonstop 24-hour days, right, working. But then when you're done with that after the week and a half, then you can take a break. You earned a decent amount of money with that music video. So now you can either take off for a week, you know, or a few days, or you can jump into another job, but this next job isn't as crazy, right? And you've got some money in your bank account. So, you know, you put in all that work and then you earned it, some money. But here, like the deadlines will be just absolutely crazy. Like you have to do all of these sequences worth like 4 minutes of animation, and they all have to be done in some ridiculous timeline, and you can't get an extension on that because they cut the deadline so close to air date here. Like I was working on in-between animation of some episodes 48 hours before they were to air on TV, and I had to finish real fast to pass it to the colorist, who had to really quickly in a few hours finish their stuff, who had to then run it to the editor, who had to then just sit there at his desk until everyone was done, even if it got into him at 5 a.m. in the morning one morning, right? Like he'd have to sit there all night, wait for it to whenever it came to him. And then the second it came to him, boom, he has to do it within the next hour and a half and then render it and then run it over to the TV station and like just it barely makes it on air, right? So when you're dealing with such harsh deadlines like that, and then you get the big stack of sequences, you know, Henry, you have to do these. It's not that I'm being forced to work 15-hour days, right? But I should mention, I mainly did that when I was an in-between animator. I still do crazy hours now, and especially when I direct stuff, like who knows when I have to pull some ridiculousness. But it was uniquely harsh, I think, when I was an in-between animator. And key. I guess it depends what the project is, because even now certain projects I get dragged back into that kind of scheduling, but when they put a big stack of, you know, stuff on your desk and give you the deadline, it's not that they're saying you have to work 8-hour days or 6-hour days or 12-hour days. It's not that. Actually, no one cares about your hours. There's no clock in and clock out times. I mean, I think all the studios like check that just to have a record, but like they don't care, right? Your pay isn't going to be affected by that. But what they care about is you have to hand in what you were assigned, right? So if you are so fast and so good, and some super animators who've been there for a long time, they're just so good at their craft, and you're like, how are they so good? They'll take that whole stack and be done even so, I've even seen a couple people do it like so fast that their day is short. Like, you finished in 6 hours and now you're just leaving at like 4 p.m. Like, how are you done? Like, that's so insane. This is going to take me 3 days to do, and you got done in 6 hours. That's absolute insanity. But for those who can do that, they work a 6 hour day and then leave. It's about finishing what you were assigned, right? But for most people, and what most people are assigned is so much that, like, you don't have to work the big long day. But if you don't, are you realistically going to finish this? You have to just figure out yourself, what is it going to take for me to finish this? And then finish it. And that's it. So that's why I think you hear so many stories about animators working so many long, hard hours, because the amount of work and the deadlines they get require that amount of work to get done. I guess, like, the advocates for better conditions in the West would be, you know, well, give them less work and, you know, up the pay of that less work. But that's easier said than done, because right now, you know, like, they're only making a profit off of these things with the given conditions. So if you suddenly, you know, double the production time, you know, like, you change the schedule so that you're not going to make one episode in a month, you're going to make one episode in 3 months or whatever, all of a sudden, you know, like, how much more expensive did that episode just become? So I have sympathy for people saying, like, it's very difficult to change that. And I understand why it's not easy to change that. But at the same time, the result is there's a lot of animators that have a stack of work on their desk that isn't going to get done unless they pull some ridiculous 15-hour work days for, like, a week or two straight. And that's probably not good. Yeah. Someday, obviously, it would be nice if somehow that could get fixed, because that is really hard.
Yeah, and it sounds a lot like when I was introduced to animation the first time, it was like in a film agency that was doing mostly commercials for TV. That's where I met the guy who became my business partner, and we ended up making Frame Freak Studio. But it seems that it was pretty similar. We're from the outside the U.S. We are from El Salvador, so we had these times where everything was good and we enjoyed a lot of time there working, but there was other times where they sold a TV ad and it was like some crazy animation that needed to be done like in 2 weeks, and in those days, like, holy shit, like, we had these cases of people staying up to 3 in the yeah. morning, 5 in the morning. Like, they will, sometimes they will just leave their, they will leave some render done. Then they will go to the house really fast just to bath and eat something just so they will stink on the next day. Come back in less than 1 hour because our country is really small. So we were able to do that, like, just go out at 1 hour, bath, eat, come. Continuing the work, and yeah, we had many, many, many times where that happened, and it wasn't like, as you say, like, somebody with the shotgun pointing to their heads, but it was just the deadline, like, the deadline was the crazy one. And the reason why I was asking that is because now we have been working really hard for the last 3 years. We had gotten to in the beginning, we were just working to, as you mentioned, build a portfolio, build, like, the quality brand. We think we got it. We got it to the point where we're starting to get good clients that ask for more complex work. But at the same time, we have been able to create a good process that where they are paying, are starting to pay really good. And at the same time, we can get to the deadlines in a humane song that nobody has to be hurrying it up to finish it. But we have found the problem of the volume. Like, we can just take, like, one of these kind of works at the same time, because we cannot find the quality artists, let's say. So in Latin America, usually what happens is that artists even though they might have like an amazing talent, but they don't have the work ethic. So it doesn't make sense to have like an amazing talent who is going to deliver the job like really, really late. And we had even one case of a guy who delivered the job 3 months late, and luckily we didn't need it. His work really fast, but still 3 months, like, what the fuck?
Yeah. and yeah, obviously that's like totally unacceptable usually. I mean, maybe for one reason or another it worked out that time, but yeah, if people all just left, like we did actually at our studio have a case like this one time, and I was not happy to say the least. Like, someone had a deadline of handing everything, you know, before they leave. I don't need it necessarily by 10 p.m. or whatever, but I do need it for the first thing the next morning for like a render at 8 a.m. and then you know, an immediate morning delivery, right? And I got in, and you know, it wasn't done. Like, there was still like three in-betweens that weren't done and colored, and I was like, where is it? And I contacted the person, they were like, well, it was getting really late, and I was like, it's time to leave. And I'm like, ah, and like my head exploded, right? Because like, I don't want to be, and you know, now I'm on the flip side of it, right? As a director at DayArt, you know, I'm kind of like a boss essentially of the people that are working, you know, on the production that I'm in charge of. So I'm like, okay, here's the schedule. Here's who's going to work on what. But you know, like when we had our meeting, it's like, I said, like, this needs to get done by this day, and here's the reason, because the next morning there's a render, right? So can you do that? Like, if you can't from day one and you tell me that, you know, then I can think about, okay, you're saying that's impossible, let's rework the schedule, let's see, whatever, right? But you know, it was like, okay, it'll be done by then. And then, like, I needed you to just stay and work until it was done, right? So I understand, like, sometimes that is what a production requires, and you understand that. Like, sometimes you get the delivery, you just had to stay until it's done. Like, that's the nature of how to get this stuff produced.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And we had, like, that was the worst case scenario, like the guy who delivered 3 months later. But we had many cases where we actually went to the artist, like, ask, like, when do you think that you can have this ready? And they gave us the date. Like, it wasn't even that we imposed this date, but they did it, and they still didn't deliver on time. Or cases where we gave a specific instructions to not do something, and they went and did it. So that ends up like, why did you do this? I told you specifically not to do this. Now we have to waste time fixing this shit. And we had many, many issues on that end. So it was kind of frustrating, because you have like this amazing artist who can create amazing art, but if you put it with the rules of a project that has to be finished by some date with some requirements.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, and we are still not at the place where we can hire like the top tier animators in the US or Canada or something like that. So I was checking the situation in Japan, and it's like, oh, well, obviously we still cannot pay like US prices, but we can definitely pay way better than they are earning now. So if we can hire people in Japan and pay them like decent enough, like double what they are earning maybe, or triple sometimes, and give them like a decent deadline that is not going to kill them, and like 8 working hours and Saturday and Sunday off and all this time, like my curiosity was like, if I give them like a perfect scenario where they don't have to overwork themselves, will they still do it?
you would have almost no hope. You would have almost no hope of finding that, because it's funny, because we're located here, and we're building a team, right? But even we find it surprisingly more difficult than we thought. We have lots of connections to speak Japanese and et cetera, et cetera, right? And we have made a really good team, I think. But to find animators working in this industry that are willing to come over to work on your production is a lot more difficult, even with all the persuasive stuff you've mentioned, like, hey, if you work for us, you'll make more money for less hours and et cetera, right? But it's harder to persuade than you think, because the one thing that people have here in Japan than they do anywhere else is options for exactly what to work on, right? So most people are working because they really love anime and want to be involved in certain types of production. So the people that are working on Naruto, for example, or, you know, Naruto's done, but Boruto, right? Like, generally speaking, they love that series. They love that series. So they'll give anything for that series. And then the people working on whatever, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure or Attack on Titan or Love Live or whatever, like, they love that show and they love that they are a part of that team. And like, I can't wait to give my all to make this thing that I love so much better, right? And contribute to that and get my name on that, and right? Like, that gives me pride and everything. So if someone comes from, you know, the side all of a sudden and says, hey, we'll pay you way more for less hours and give you all these good conditions and stuff, but you just need to work on this product, right? Their reaction is almost always, what are you talking about? Like, I don't care about your money. I don't care about your extra workout or your better work hours. I don't care about any of that. I just care about working on this thing that I was saying I was passionate about working on. So you're not offering me that. You're offering me work on something I'm not passionate about and don't love, right? Your product is what, a commercial or like it's, you know, some TV show that's going to be airing in a different country other than mine that I'm never going to watch. No, I want to keep working on insert name of their passion project or the thing that they're a fan of here. And so that's why I think recently, you know, key animators from Japan via Twitter have been taking more international work, you know, occasionally. And then similarly, unlike me, current animators who, you know, work digitally don't need to necessarily learn Japanese and move to Japan like I did, because now via Twitter, international artists can get some freelance work from Japan, right? Via the same method. But in terms of like getting a lot of people and like, or like a staff or something, or, you know, to really help you out on your production, other than a few freelance key animators potentially, I don't think you can persuade anyone here. Everyone wants to work on what they're working on, and that's why they're in the industry. And they don't care about your additional money or work hours or anything.
Yeah, I assume that, because at the same time, like, if like any other person wouldn't be working on those conditions unless they were like extremely passionate about what they are doing.
And I fall into and I'm the same, to be honest. Yeah. Like, I know, like, that I might have just described a stubborn person in that, but to be honest, like, I'm one of the stubborn people, right? Like, I could have way, I mean, if I had just stayed in America, I'd have so much more money and et cetera, at this point. And then let's say, like, I left Japan now, like, my resume would be so good, I'm sure I could find a job with 1,000,000% better conditions and everything, right? No, I want to stay here. I like working on the types of series. Like, I have nothing but pride, and like it's the pride of my life that I can say I created one of those segments for that Netflix special, and I worked on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, right? Like, the fact that I can say that is everything to me. So I get it.
Yeah, I think you might even be a little bit more stubborn than them, because you actually like had to actually.
Well, they're pretty stubborn. Yeah. I wouldn't take that away from them at all. I won't take the victory on that one. You have no idea. The stubbornness is unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah, but my case was that you actually gave all that up actively to go to Japan and do exactly that. On that note, do the studios in Japan take like intellectual properties from other countries? Like, let's say I want to sell an idea series to any studio or something like that. Does that happen?
I don't think that there's so much content out here in Japan. They don't need more content, right? So I know I get messages too. We at the studio in general get messages like, oh, I have an idea for an anime. Who can I pitch it to? Like, no one is looking for ideas. Everyone has just tons of ideas. And in Japan, there's tons of manga and tons of books that can get adapted. And all the artists and all the studios have their own original ideas for content and stuff. So no one is looking to buy ideas and concepts and things like that. No one is interested whatsoever. Now, if you are a client, if you have an idea and you want to get a pilot film produced in Japan, right? Our studio is kind of made to offer that service specifically, which is like a bridge from the east end to the west, right? So it's like if there's Western clients that want to contact the anime industry, but they themselves can't personally get in touch with easily Production IG or Madhouse or some big, you know, studio, well, they can contact us. We have all of this Japanese anime production experience, but you'll only have to speak English and talk to two Americans, right? Me and Arthel. So, for the sake of Western clients, we kind of exist. But let's even say you're a giant company, you're Sony Pictures or something, right? And can actually get in contact with Production IG. If you're a client and you're offering good money and the thing you're asking to produce is reasonable, Japan might take on jobs, right, and produce things for you. But in terms of people pitching stuff and then the studios make that stuff, that's just, I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah, and even this is something that I want to ask you about as well. You touched this topic in the beginning. For some reason, the culture in the United States and in Canada is that animation is for kids, and they do not want to let go of that idea, even though like all Japanese animation that has like a lot of areas and is having a massive success, like in whole Latin America, in the US as well, like they are huge conventions of anime, like there's obviously people paying for that, but for some reason they do not, the producers, the people who make the decision, do not want to believe that there is money to be made in making animations for teenagers, for adults, things like that. On the other hand, like Japan has probably the whole range of ages, type of people who are interested in what. Why do you think that happens on this side of the world?
So I do think that's slightly changing now, to be fair. So there is Castlevania that exists, and you know, Sturgill Simpson, Sound and Fury, we produced it in Japan, but you know, the client was the West, like they wanted that for a Western market, obviously. You know, it's America that knows Sturgill Simpson the best, so obviously it's for his fans more so than anyone. Love, Death and Robots is that Netflix, you know, a lot of things Netflix is producing aren't really kitty, and there's a lot of animations, 2D and 3D, music videos, obviously primetime cartoons, while the drawings are, you know, bubbly, cutesy kind of characters, they're not super seriously drawn. Obviously all of the humor is super adult, right? And that goes back to, you know, South Park was doing that, you know, years ago. So it's not that it's just totally for kids, I don't think, but I don't think that they see, other than Castlevania, and you know, good on Powerhouse for, you know, somehow getting that show right to happen. But other than that, I think most producers probably don't see the value, like the profit value of like making really high quality, well drawn, well animated, serious shows, right? So there are shorts and there are music videos and there is comedy that is clearly not for kids. But when it comes to like, yeah, but who sat down and spent the money and gathered the artists to make a really high quality, you know, slow drama, serious thing. That's where, I don't even know if it's just the West. I think almost only Japan does that. Japan has lots and lots of shows. They have all the kids shows too, all the little kids kindergarten shows. Obviously that animation doesn't really sell in the West and people don't even know if it's existence, but yeah, so obviously they have, you know, little kids stuff here in Japan too, and then elementary school and then middle school. But then also they have just, if you're flipping around the TV stations, it's more live action obviously than animation, but like it's not weird at all to just, oh, there's animation on, oh, there's animation on, oh, there's animation on, right? So it's just more okay in society as an art form, I think. Like, if animation happens to be the thing that's on TV, it's totally normal. It's not weird. Whereas in America, it's still like, I don't know. Like, I guess producers probably just don't produce it because they don't see the value in it. And maybe they were right for years and years. I don't know. I mean, I know us artists really want more stuff, right? I always did, and I was really frustrated when I found out that they weren't producing, you know, Ghost in the Shell in America. Where's the studio that's making this here, right? In America, is what I was always thinking. But, you know, maybe the producers do know, you know, in Japan, under those work conditions and in that society, that like there's lots of adult animation fans everywhere, that could be potentially a profitable thing. But maybe in America it's not. Like, to put all the money behind that, there just isn't enough adult animation fans that would make it. I don't know. I don't want to believe that. I want to believe you can do it, and I think they believe that,
but it's not true, because again, like, well, even if you go just outside the US, like if you go to Latin America, Japanese animation has been a hit for years. Like, I grew up on that. Like, yeah. And again, even in the US, like there is huge events like at the size of Comic-Con and things like that, completely focused on anime, and there is a huge sector of people who really, really love that. Yeah. So.
I obviously 100% believe that it can be profitable and can be this huge thing and you can convince people that it's really serious and something to be enjoyed. I think it takes investment and time to make something really good though, right? And I think that's maybe what a lot of producers don't have the patience for. Like, what if it takes a few before there's a hit, right? I don't want to, you know, take that chance, but it'll require people taking a chance and, you know, allowing for a failure or two to happen also, you know, because I can't guarantee that they're all going to be hits, right? But I still wish people would try to produce the stuff, right? And eventually there's going to be a huge, you know, hit that shows, wow, this, you know, more adult-oriented animation can really make tons of money and get, you know, fans outside of just the normal, you know, anime and animation fans. But it's going to take some producers taking that risk and actually making stuff for it to eventually happen, right? And right now, I just don't think there's enough producers. Or maybe producers are trying to pitch it, but then the production studios that actually fund the projects, maybe they're listening to all the pitches and then they're the ones going, I don't think I'm going to put our money forward to that one. And then those projects all just are dead on arrival because they never get the funding, right? So I don't know. I mean, I'm on the same side as you 100%. Like, I want to see more, you know, variety of animation produced in the West. I've always felt that way, right? That's essentially why I came to Japan, because of my frustration in that fact that we weren't producing a big variety of stuff. I think right now, yeah, like Castlevania and shows coming out of Powerhouse, and then you know, to throw us in there too, like, and us who is like an English speaking and largely Western client having anime studio in Japan. I think there's some studios like us that potentially could, you know, change the tide of people's opinions when it comes to that stuff and actually produce the kind of stuff we're talking about. So hopefully we'll have more chances like that. Hopefully that is the direction the industry will change. But who knows? I mean, there needs to be more investment. I will say that. Yeah. There needs to be more investment in those types of projects before really high quality, cool looking products like those exist, right? You know, Arthel and I have tons of ideas. I'm sure all of the creators over at Powerhouse have tons of additional ideas for more cool stuff they want to make. But at the end of the day, even if there's people that are ready and willing to go to produce that stuff, to make that stuff for the world, if there is no money coming into it, then all we can do is just sit and keep trying. But it's never going to happen until one day that funding comes in, right? Because you can't move forward with the productions and see them through to the end unless the funding is there. It's just impossible. I mean, you can make a pilot film here or there, but that's the extent of it. You can't make the big giant film or the big giant TV show that becomes famous without the funding.
Yeah. And yeah, Castlevania, I think is like, it was like the perfect storm because, well, if you see the producer, Adi Shankar, like this guy is maybe in the same wavelength of you because this guy is taking a lot of resources to produce his own films for YouTube without like not making any money at all, just making his bootleg universe and making like very dark series. And he convinces other people to join in just through passion. And so he has top quality actors working on his independent films just because it is a passion project that looks really good, right? And then you have like the guys at Powerhouse who at the same time had the help from Frederator and Fredsiver to kind of join forces and just like everybody involved was like open-minded enough to give this a shot. But even then, they ended up hiring people in South Korea, if I remember. I had a lot of interviewing the creative director of Castlevania before.
And Japan, like us, by the way, because we helped out on season 3 of Castlevania a little bit.
Nice. So, but when I interviewed them, it was just season 1. So, at the point, they hired people in South Korea. And then when the show came back to the U.S. to them, they just animated like more complex scenes in fighting the scenes, or if they thought there was like a tiny animation that it was needed to be done better, then they did it. But again, like we come to the same problem where those jobs, even if Powerhouse made this series, like they went all the way to South Korea and Japan to
use. Well, to be fair, the world is different than it used to be, and not to get into politics obviously on this, but the world is globalized for many if not all industries, and animation is no exception. And so there is no going back to actually a world where there is just a Western industry and an Eastern industry. The clients come from somewhere, right? So I think there needs to be more clients and producers and people willing to invest money from the West for, you know, maybe stories written and aimed at the Western market to create the kind of stuff we're talking about, right? For all intents and purposes, Western serious adult animation, right? But when it comes to the production side of things, everyone helps everyone and everyone works with everyone to some extent. Yeah. So there's never going to be any production where you don't see some help from some Asian studios in a Western production, I don't think. And then similarly, if you look at credits of anime, you'll always see some Western names popping up. Especially if you look at all the credits, right? So it's like all of a sudden then where did the music come from or where did something come from, right? Some aspect of this production, even if it was just the music, was not Japan. All of a sudden they worked with, you know, Western, you know, producers and stuff. So everyone works with everyone. You're never going to have a solely Japanese production. You're never going to have a solely American production for the most part. And that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, that part, I'm really happy about that, because if it wasn't for that, like, my destiny should have been being in a call center in my country forever, and probably I would have taken my own life because of the depression. But yeah, like, again, we're from El Salvador. We were able to put, like, the animation studio. We were able to automate many processes to work completely online, locally, way before this whole thing started. And we get clients from the U.S., and even though... we even have a guy from Russia, another from Ukraine, another from Colombia, helping us out in a couple of animations. So yeah, on that end, like, I'm really happy that it's that way, because it gave us the opportunity to actually get out of a really shitty situation that we had locally. But yeah, the reason why I was asking this is because with these opportunities open, is there, like, does anybody either in the U.S. or United Country can work for these animations in Japan being from their home? Or is this something that falls strictly under certain professions inside the animation industry?
You're asking, like
for example, if I wanted to work in animation in Japan, but from my own home, in my own country. Like, yeah, well, is this something that I can do just in certain positions, or?
Well, so now you can, apparently. If you asked me even just 5 years ago, is that the case? I would have been like, hell no, are you crazy? Like, you have to move to Japan, end of discussion. You're absolutely out of your mind. That's completely ridiculous. And, you know, that was like a staple of my story and life, right? Like, I had to make that decision to move to Japan. So the thought of people thinking that they could just skip doing gigantic life changes to get to this very unique job position, it was unthinkable, right? And I always planned on telling that story, and I never really planned on, like, writing a book, but it was always in the back of my head, like, I have such a unique story, maybe I could, right? But all of a sudden, and I don't want to sound like a cranky old man, but, like, it is, I mean, I'm happy that the world is changing and becoming more globalized, and I'm happy that, people are getting all these good opportunities, but there is a little bit of frustration, like, dang, you know, up until literally just a few years ago, you were required to do this gigantic list of very difficult things that I went through and I did, right, to get here. And then all of a sudden now it is possible for you to just literally graduate high school and then sit in your house in America and still get a freelance animation job from Japan, right, and then get credited on anime. So that's crazy, but that is the reality now. So now it is possible. I still think you should know Japanese to the extent that you can. I know that there are some, like, production managers that contact people, like Twitter animators that they really like in English. So I think a few studios do reach out to some people. But if you want to reach out to the studio, right, if you want to actually proactively try to get the anime job, if you can contact the studio with a Japanese email and then have your good, you know, portfolio that shows you can deliver digitally that you know, freelance animation work, I think then you could do it. So I would still put Japanese on the list of things you should probably start getting good at if you really want to work in anime, right? Like, yeah. But yes, nowadays, now that, you know, Japan still works on paper and pencil a lot. In any animation studio, you still see that happening. Even us, like, we're a digital studio for all intents and purposes. We work with, like, Toon Boom's Harmony. That's our, like, main software for our Sound and Fury shorts, to the extent we could. Like, all of my sequences were done start to finish in Harmony, right? But certain animators on the project or certain artists that participated were like, I can really do my job better if I could just print this out and do it on paper, can I? And then we were like, well, okay, you know, do the best job you can. So, and then when we help out with other productions like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and stuff, sometimes the work will come back to us. Oh, hey, we started digitally with the layouts, but we decided the key animation is going to all be done on paper. So can you deliver it on paper? And then we say yes. So it's still done a lot on paper, but there are certain steps like those layouts that are done digitally. So if you speak Japanese, have a good portfolio that shows you can draw digital layouts and hand them in quickly, and you're still willing to work for the low pay of the Japanese anime industry, it is absolutely possible and reasonable to think you can contact a Japanese studio from wherever you live in the world, and then they pass you a few sequences of freelance work. Yes. Now it is finally reasonable to assume that you can do that.
Yeah, and I think that after this lockdown thing and everybody working online because of government imposed measures, I think that is going to accelerate a lot after we get
lockdown. It will.
On the topic of the technical area, what softwares or what tools do you use to create the animations? On this side of the world, we use usually Toon Boom, After Effects, Anime Studio, or it's called Mojo now, Kakani, things like that. But over there, do you have like a specialized software for anime or?
We use Harmony. Yeah, so we use Toon Boom and Storyboard Pro, right? I know that various studios out here also use Clip Studio, and they use TV Paint. And then for compositing, everyone uses After Effects, right? Harmony, you can do compositing as well, but for the Japanese anime industry in general, After Effects is the go-to for compositing. And then Photoshop too, right? People,
yeah.
I there's a couple studios here that use Flash or Anime CC, but that's what I used mainly when I was in America, like Super Jail, and the music videos I mentioned were all done via Flash. But here in Japan, that's few and far between. But Photoshop to edit images and individual maybe in-betweens and stuff. Yeah. Okay. For us personally, it's Toon Boom, though. That's what we mainly use.
Awesome. And also, this is my understanding. I could be wrong, but so far, so I have seen, in this audience world, like, we create the voiceover first, and then we use the voiceover as a guide to create animations.
Yeah.
I think that in Japan, they do the animation first and then come the voiceover. Not sure if that's correct, but if it is, like, doesn't it create like a little bit of a problem in trying to sync the voices to the animation? Or?
So it is all done afterwards here. They call it like a Africo, which is like after recording or something. And the way it's done is usually the animator guesses via the script and via the storyboards, like where exactly, or the technical director, the enshutsu, would tell the animator when they're having their production meeting, like from this frame to this frame is the time that the person will be talking. So do the lip flap from here to here, which in the West, usually the animation is very linked up, right? So you see the mouth actually moving exactly with the words. And that's a benefit of recording early, right? Because then you can hear, and then you can actually just put the F mouth where exactly the guy says at the F sound, right? But here it's always just 1 2 3 1 2 3 1 2 3 with an exception of maybe a 4 for some kind of like extra open mouth or something here and there, but generally 1 2 3 1 2 3. So if you do the mouth flap 1 2 3 1 2 3 and make it randomized, right, how those three are flickering during the exact time that you know you're going to need the line of dialogue. Often, to be honest, it just works out because the voice actors here, they'll retake their line a handful of times until they, you know, their job, unlike the job, I guess, in the West, isn't just, well, no, it's also in the West if anyone needs to dub something, right? Because anime gets dubbed in the West also, right? So it would be the same thing there. So like the animation's already done, it's not changing, right? So you have to just start talking when the character's mouth first opens and then be done by the time the final mouth closes, right? And if you do that, then it'll generally look like it fits. In live action, it looks strange, right? Because you can tell that's not the exact, right? But when it's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, it kind of just works. So that's how they still do it here. Now, if someone does a line and they go a little bit longer, and like let's say it required a little bit more time, like the time that the animator put the mouth flap is too short for this line of dialogue, they'll catch that, and either they'll have time to do a rush, like retake of like how long they want the mouth flap to hold, and then re-render things quickly, and then make it by air date. Or sometimes that would be like a DVD or a Blu-ray retake, like the when it aired on TV. To be honest, like a line of dialogue was a little awkward at one point or another, right? But then they fixed it for the eventual DVD release, which is probably the only thing that was ever released in America, so that's all you ever saw. But, you know, maybe there was a little mess up on the TV air version, potentially. Generally, it's good, though. Generally, it's good. The voice actors just start talking when the mouth starts. They're done by the time the mouth stops, and then it actually just works totally fine.
Awesome. And one more question that I wanted to ask, since you this just popped up because you have the experience, but just to give you an idea of what we want to do eventually in the future, right now we're doing commercial work because we gotta eat. But the idea that I have for the future is to create like a team for commercial work that give us enough money so whether we can produce our own series or kind of start producing, pretty much take creative work as we want to. Like the ultimate dream will be to be able to open a business and a studio in Japan and be able to get to the point where we can actually take a manga and say, hey, we want to animate this shit. And on that end, how hard it is for somebody outside Japan to register a business there and to go through all these logistics of hiring and all that?
That would be a better question for Arthel, because De Arstagio, our studio here is, Arthel is the CEO. He's the guy that handles all the stuff and the art direction stuff. But then I'm like the lead director for all intents and purposes. And so I take over to the extent that I can. I guess it depends on the project. Like I take over the project and I understand the start to finish of the anime production process. When it comes to the business stuff, that'd be a better question for him. The obvious answer, though, is it's very hard. You know, Arthel has been in Japan even longer than I have, so, you know, many, many years of your life here gives you good knowledge of the language, the culture, the laws. Probably allows you to have unique types of visas that might be required to open businesses and things like that. So it would be, I mean, unless, you know, giant corporations always get priority over everything because they have tons of money. So if you want to open a business in another country and you have, you know, $700 million you're looking to invest, then I'm sure anywhere, including Japan, will be happy to have you all of a sudden. And here's your visa, sir, right, to open a business. But, you know, if it's not that and it's a small business, then, I imagine it's super, super hard, to be honest, just the honest answer.
Yeah, I can imagine as well. And is there any last advice that you would like to give to people who want to follow a similar path that you have that are listening to this interview?
I think I kind of mentioned it all throughout the interview, but just to wrap it up, I think times change really quickly, especially now. So following my path, I don't think you could have ever done that anyway, just because there's only a handful of foreigners working, or Westerners at least, working in the Japanese anime industry. There's a bunch of freelancers that work from their own country nowadays. But in terms of the actual Westerners that are sitting in and working in the anime industry, there's more now than when I came, but there's still only a handful. Every studio has I wouldn't even say it's a guaranteed one per studio. Like in every few studios, there's maybe one, right? But everyone has their own very unique individual story. There's nothing that you can realistically use from hearing our stories and then just follow them, right? Maybe you can be inspired by our stories and then find your own path. But if working in an industry, in a foreign country is what you want to do, you're going to have to find your own path there, right? Get to the country, learn the language, make connections. I don't know how you get in, right? It's very hard, but we're all proof that it can be done. So you'd have to find your own path. Now for people, graduating high school and college nowadays, if you just want to work freelance and get your name on an anime or two, but you're not interested in leaving your country, it appears that that's an option now, right, with the whole Twitter thing. So look into what's available for you now and what's going to be available in the near future, right? Maybe look ahead to what potentially do I see as future opportunities and maybe be prepared for that. But knowing what it is you want to accomplish is also really important. So is just getting credited on an anime or two good enough and then you're fine, you're satisfied? Or do you really want to, like me, sit and work in an animation studio in Japan, right? If that's what you want, then what it is you will have to attempt and accomplish is going to be very different from the person that just wants to do a freelance job. So figure it out what it is personally you want to accomplish, and then figure out how to do what you need to do to make sure your unique goal gets accomplished, right? But be specific. Be specific would be my biggest advice. Be specific to yourself. Don't lie to yourself. Be very honest with yourself about exactly what it is you want to accomplish, and then work very hard for that. To give a final shameless self promotion here at the end. But I think it goes along with this question. Arthel and I think I mentioned, have been doing a vlog weekly this whole year, and I think we're just going to keep going. So if you want to hear more directly from me and Arthel, follow us, Dera Stagio, or individually me on Twitter, Instagram, all those different places. But check out the YouTube vlogs that we share, because we go into different specific things in every episode. So we have episodes where we're let's say you're a high school student graduating, what would be some specific things I think you should do now, right? We're not, we can't guarantee anything. It's just kind of random advice, but I think we go into a little bit more specifics there. So give it a view.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that. And I'm going to put all the links to your blog and all your social media in the interview post as well, so that everybody just go to the link here and pretty much you will be able to find all the links to find all these materials. I want to thank you a lot, Henry, because we talk a lot of topics. We spoke for a long time, but just to give you an idea, in countries like ours, there is many countries like ours in Latin America, which don't have any art career. For example, the closest things we had to follow for a while was graphic design, and that was like the closest thing we could get to illustration and animation, things like that. And we ended up dropping out. And for example, my business partner is a guy who was so dedicated to animation that he learned by his own, like he took the photograms of video game fight, like the fighting video games, and he will go like frame by frame just to see the animations of the fights and learn from it. And even though like I talk about, there is a lot of artists in Latin American culture that have an amazing talent, but that don't have the work ethic. There is also, as well as always, a group of people who actually have the talent because not because they are just talented by nature, but because they have the work ethic. And again, my business partner, I think, is one example of that. So having all this knowledge, I think it would be very interesting for this kind of people, because again, like in countries where if you want to be an artist and you're in a country that is not that well developed, obviously art is not going to be priority in that country. You're not going to be able to find great jobs. And again, maybe for people in Canada and the US, these salaries can sound like really bad, but like if I had to go back to my young self and I get the option of the call center and the animation industry back then, if I had it like when I was young, I will choose the animation industry. In fact, I did. Like I quit a corporate job that was like the stable thing to do in my country to kind of fund this studio. And even though it wasn't like at the time certain that we were going to have any success with it. I was the kind of guy who I don't care how hard it is the path, but if it is, but I'm not going to be doing things that I don't want to do. Simple as that. For those who are like me and like you, like that, no matter the obstacle, like we don't care about it. We just care about doing the things that we're passionate about. I think that this knowledge that you brought into this interview will be very, very helpful.
I hope so. Thanks.
Okay. So thanks again for giving us your time. And also, if you like this interview, please click the like button below and also subscribe to the YouTube channel. Or if you're listening from the podcast platform, subscribe to our podcast so you can be notified when the next episode comes up. Until next time.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Creative Hustler Show. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, don't forget to share and subscribe. For more info, check out www.brainfreakstudio.com. See you in the next episode.